The sergeant's account of his past was ancient in its form and confusingly dramatic, as perhaps would have been a game of three-level chess between Richard Burbage and Sasha Guitry. It all seemed to revolve around his mother, a woman as ambitious as Daedalus. The sergeant was 22 years old. He was as ambivalent as a candle burning at both ends. Awake, his resentment was almost always at full boil. Asleep, Captain Marco could understand. It simmered and bubbled in the blackened iron pot of his memory. Raymond had made tech sergeant because he was a bleakly good soldier and because he was the greatest natural marksman in the division. Any weapon he could lift, he could kill with. He pointed it languidly, pulled the trigger, and something always fell. Some of the men appreciated this quality very much and liked to be with or near Raymond when any action occurred, but otherwise he was scrupulously shunned by all of them. Raymond was a left-handed man of considerable height, to which he soared from wide hips, narrower shoulders, with a triangular face which suspended a pointed chin that was narrow and not very firm. The vertical halves of his face pouted together sullenly, projecting the effluvia of self-pity. His skin was immoderately white, which made the prominent veins of his arms and legs seem like blue neon tubing. His cropped hair was light blonde, and it grew down low and in a round shape over his forehead. In a style affected by many American businessmen of a juvenile or unicoid turn. Despite that specific inventory of his countenance, Raymond was a very handsome man, very nearly a pretty man, who had heavy bones, great physical strength, and large glaucous eyes with very large whites, like those of a carousel horse pursued by the Erinyes, those female avengers of antiquity. When the flautist Böhm engineered the new design and the new note value system for the clarinet, his system took a half note away from the thumb and a half note away from the third finger on each hand, as it would have been played on the standard Albert clarinet. By so doing, he created an aural schism and brought a most refined essence of prejudice to a world of music. He created two clarinetists with two subtly different qualities of sound, where there had been one before, and provided amid this decadence many bitter misunderstandings. It was as if Raymond had been built by Herr Böhm to have had his full notes dropped to half notes, then to quarter notes, then to eighth notes. For his was an almost silent music, if music Raymond contained at all. In spite of himself, the captain liked Shaw, and the captain was a matured and thoughtful man. He liked Raymond, he had decided after much consideration of the phenomenon, because in one way or another, Shaw was continuously demonstrating that he liked the captain, and the captain was too wise a man to believe he could resist a plea like that. Nobody else in Company C liked Raymond, and perhaps no one else in the U.S. Army did. His comrades skirted him charily, or they pretended he was not there, as the fathers of daughters might regard an extremely high incidence of rape in their neighborhood. It was not that Raymond was hard to like, he was impossible to like. The captain, a thoughtful man, understood that Shaw's attention to him was merely the result of the pressure of a lifetime of having his nose rubbed in various symbols of authority, and as the sergeant's life story droned on and on, the captain came to realize that Raymond was pouring out a cherished monologue upon the beloved memory of his long-dead betrayed father, who had been cast off by that bitch before Raymond could begin to love him. Amateur psychiatric prognosis can be fascinating when there is absolutely nothing else to do. Also fascinating was the captain's unending search for one small, even isolated address of Raymond's that was warm, or in any human way, attractive. Raymond's crushing contemptuousness aside, examining such a minute thing as the use of his hands while talking could be distressing, and the captain could see how little fragments of Raymond's personality had formed one great cold lump. Raymond could not stop using one horrid gesture, a go-away-you-bother-me flicking sort of gesture that he managed by having his long fishbelly white fingers do small backhand brushing gestures to point up anything he said. Anything. He made the brush if he said good morning. If. He flicked air away from himself when he talked about the weather, politics, his field, food, or gear. Anything. This digitorum gesticulatione was about the most irritating single bit of movement that the captain could ever remember seeing, and the captain was a thoughtful man. He had burst out against it early one morning while the sky was flinging light all around them, and Raymond had responded with a look of confusion, unaware of his fault, and disturbed. He had said to the captain that he, Flick Flick, did not understand what the captain meant, Brush Brush. And at last the captain had chosen to overlook it, as it was a relatively minor thing to a man who planned to be a wartime or a peacetime general of 4 stars some day, and who had permitted himself to decide that he would be crazy to refuse to understand a hero-worshipping sergeant, whose relative might some day be chairman, or have direct influence on the chairman, of the Armed Services Committee of the Congress. It took that kind of objectivity to begin to tolerate Raymond, who was overfull of haughtiness. Raymond stood as though someone might have just opened a beach umbrella in his bowels. His very glance drawled when he deigned to look, seldom deigning to speak. There were wags in the company who said he put his lips up in curl papers each night, and all of these things are sure ingredients for arousing and sustaining the hostility of others. In theory, Shaw possessed a manner that should become a sergeant, and perhaps would become a drill sergeant or a Marine Corps public relations sergeant, but not a combat non-com, because under heightened realism, any attitude of power must always be accompanied by something that makes the privilege of power pardonable, and Shaw possessed no such rescuing qualifiers. His resentment of people, places, and things was a stifling, sensual thing. The captain's name was Ben Marco. He was a professional officer. He had been 6th in his class at the academy. His family had claimed the army as a trade ever since a gunnery lieutenant who had grown up with Hernando de Soto at Barcarota, Spain, had left Pizarro for a look at the upper Mississippi River. Marco followed his father's vocation because it was the last preserve of intimate feudalism. Terraced ranks of fief and lord, where a major can always remain a peasant to a general, and a lieutenant a peon to a major. Marco was an intelligent intelligence officer. He looked like an Aztec crossed with an Eskimo, which was a fairly common Western American type because the Aztec troops had drifted down from Siberia quite a long time before the Spaniards of Pizarro and Cortez had drifted north out of the Andes at Veracruz. He had metallic, copper-colored skin, and strong, very white teeth. But aside from pigmentation, the straight black hair, the aboriginal look, and the eyes colored like Potage Saint-Germain, the pottage's pottage, green, he had had the contrasting fortune of being born in New Hampshire, where his father had been stationed at the time just prior to duty in the canal zone. He stood 5'11" and 3/4", and looked small when standing beside Raymond. He had a powerful frame, and the meat on it was proportioned like the stone meat on an Epstein statue. He had the superior digestive system, which affords almost every man blessed with it, the repose to become thoughtful. They were an odd combination. The civilian who tried to talk like a soldier, and the soldier who had been ordered by the Joint Chiefs in this new and polite army to damn well learn how to talk like a civilian. The frosty Brahmin with the earthy ambitious man. The pseudo-mystagogue with the counterpuncher. The inhibitory with the excitatory, the latter being a designation used by the physiologist, Ivan Petrovich Pavlov.